great to be back with WGN.
It's White Sox Weekly on the official radio station of the Chicago White Sox, 720 WGN.
Working on a nickname for Lucas Giolito, celebrating a White Sox win. Going to hear from the White Sox first-round draft pick Andrew Vaughn coming up after 5 o'clock here on White Sox Weekly. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mark Harmon. Good to be with you this Saturday afternoon. Hope you're having a great day. I'm looking back in time on Giolito. Like, when he was playing in the Rising Stars All-Star game, he just scribbled out the Lito, and he just went with Gio. But that's boring. I think we can do more. An interesting comment from Steve Stone on the broadcast today. Steve Stone, been around this game quite a while. Won a Cy Young, the whole deal. Knows pitching pretty well, right? Says, quote, he's never seen a transformation in a pitcher like he has in Lucas Giolito. He has never seen a transformation like he has in Lucas Giolito. I mean, that is high praise. And I don't think Stoney is just trying to be hyperbolic and be Mr. Rah-Rah Steve Stone on the broadcast. I mean, that tells you something right there. I mean, if a guy like that who knows exactly what he's talking about is saying it, I don't think we're going too far to work on a nickname here. Hey, vote early and vote often. Help get Jose Abreu, Tim Anderson, James McCann, Yoan Moncada to the 2019 MLB All-Star Game. You can't vote for pitchers. That's why Lucas isn't on there. And Lucas won't need to worry about that. He'll be in Cleveland. It's presented by MasterCard. Vote now at WhiteSox.com/vote. Sergio, welcome to WGN and White Sox Weekly. Go ahead.
How's it going? I'm thinking Lucas Smooth Giolito. Everything about him has just been smooth, watching him pitch, his interviews, delivery. Mm-hmm. I'm going with Lucas Smooth Giolito.
Cool, composed, smooth.
Yeah, it's been phenomenal. I've been there at home watching him pitch a couple times, and it's been great.
It's rare for me to say, like, go to the ballpark and watch an individual player. I'm more just kind of a team guy, enjoy the day, go into a baseball game. I don't really pay attention to who's on the mound, per se. I just enjoy the game of baseball, period. But Lucas is actually worth going for. Because if you're going to, and I appreciate the call, Sergio, thanks so much. Like, if you're going to go and actually sit there and pay attention, which I think about, 3% of the people do when they go to baseball games, right? You sit down the line, you have a hot dog, you drink a beer, you talk to your friend. You're not really paying close attention. Maybe if you're sitting, but there are some diehards who sit there, and I think you almost have to be behind home plate if you really want to watch the game, right? You want to know strike zone, all that type of stuff. Lucas has just been very fun to watch, just his consistency and how he handles each at bat. In the past, when things would go awry, he would lose himself, he'd show his emotion on the mound, and then you knew it was about to go right off a cliff. Now, when he walks a batter, you can see the way he's talking to himself. It's impressive. And he gets himself right back on track. 312-981-7200. John, welcome to 720 WGN. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was thinking of jumping on the old Pontiac muscle car called Giolito.
The Pontiac muscle car. This is where I don't play, John. You got to explain that one to me.
There's the old GTO from.
Oh, GTO. I got it. Okay.
GTO, yeah.
No, I'm with you. That's not bad. I think
play on it a little bit. Go
yeah.
Ahead.
You know, I think Lucas likes cars too. I got to double check that, but I seem to remember him having some level of enjoyment of a vehicle.
I know they often called the GTO the GOAT, and we don't want to call him that.
Wasn't there like a theme song for that, for the GTO? Little GTO, you sure look fine, right?
Exactly.
Well, that would be fun if he came like out of the dugout and they were playing that, or, you know, get a little little organ music. Like after a strikeout?
Right. That was punch out when they called Pontiac's ponchos back in the day, too.
Did you have a GTO, John?
No, but I have a Pontiac Solstice now, but my first car was a GTO and a tuxedo. It was a Grand Prix.
Pontiac still makes cars? That's amazing. I didn't know that.
No, they don't. They don't. But I got this in 2010. It was the Solstice. It was my girlfriend was out of town for the weekend, so I quickly bought that, and I got 10 years of driving out of it for 2 hours of ripe, and I think it's well worth it.
This is kind of fascinating, John. Your girlfriend would have been anti you buying a Pontiac. She left for the weekend. You went out and bought one, and you still have it here in 2019. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, but she wasn't against it. She just said, hey, what do you mean buying this? But She's fine right now. Nope. I give her the keys once in a while.
That's nice of you, John. Thanks for calling, man. Little GTO, right. Little Giolito. I like it. 312-981-7200. Love the creativity coming in here. Let us get... who do we got here? Let's go with Tony. Welcome to WGN. Tony, go ahead, man.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Tony.
Good. Listen, how about Lucas Gillette?
Lucas...
Like the shaver, like the razor, like the shaver, you know.
Yeah, I get
it. He shaves the corners and he pins the ball down.
Right, and every day you got to have a good shave. You got to rely on something. This could be good for Lucas's pocketbook if he's listening.
That's what I was going to say, too. He could tattoo it on his forehead and make a fortune outside of what he's going to make next year anyway.
Yeah, I don't know if he wants to quite go tattoo on the forehead. Look, that's a little aggressive, but I got you. All right, Tony. Gillette, Giolito, let's all make some money.
Yep,
thank you very much. I appreciate it. Maybe Gillette is, you know, I don't know if they're watching White Sox baseball, but they should be. Come on, Gillette. See what you got in Giolito. Mike, what's going on?
Hey, I'd be afraid to deny that offer there, Tom.
What's that?
I'd be afraid to deny that offer there, you know. You should make them number one, you know.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. Anyways, how about McCann? I think he's been a lot to do with Lucas's success.
No, that's Mike.
You don't think so?
No, Mike. I absolutely agree. It's a great point, and I appreciate the phone call. We're just up against the break here. You're absolutely right. James McCann coming over here from Detroit has helped Lucas a ton. One of the biggest things that McCann has done, and he shared this, was like he would sit in the Tigers dugout and watch Giolito, and he would know what Giolito they were getting. Because if the Tigers were getting to him, you would basically, as McCann put it, you would just watch him fall apart. And you knew that, okay, he's not making it out of the third inning today. And so he comes over here, and he tells him this. You can't be showing your emotion on the mound. And I'm sure that Giolito probably has heard that before. But to hear it from a guy that he was competing against, who's now on the ball club, and he's working with them behind home plate, it clearly had an impact. And in addition to that, probably even more importantly, they have varied the way they attack hitters. He sees the Royals, he sees them again. It's a totally different attack. One day he's throwing a ton of off-speed pitches, the next day he's coming with the hard stuff. They're keeping teams off balance, and I get it, the Royals aren't the 1927 Yankees. But there's a strategy that's going on, and there's a chemistry between those two that's been enormously important. It's a very good observation right there. It's spot on. Jim, go ahead, man. Welcome to 720 WGN, White Sox Weekly.
Hey, how you doing? Jim here. I got a nickname for you, Lucas Pukis. Because I tell you what, this Lucas guy, he's making these hitters sick up there.
Oh.
The changeup, the fastball, he's working it. He's dynamite up there. I like Lucas Pukis. What do you think?
Well, see, now it almost sounds like you're insulting him, Jim, but then I get it. He's making the other batters puke. I don't know if...
Exactly, yeah. No insult to Lucas. The kid is he's impeccable.
I got you. All right, Jim. Thank you. Lucas Pukis. See, that's the low level of nickname analysis that I like. I mean, we don't need to go... This doesn't need to be a class at Harvard right here. That's fine. Lucas Pukis. It rhymes. It's... catchy, not necessarily catchy, but a good effort. I liked it. David, welcome to WGN. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man. Thanks for calling.
That's kind of Lucas Pukis is kind of funny. Maybe if he catches a cold, we call him Lucas Mucus. But I was thinking along the lines of that guy that was talking about him being smooth. What if you called him Silky G?
Say that again, Silky G.
Silky G.
Silky G. Mm-hmm. That sort of ups the coolness of Lucas. Thank you so much, David. Like, I don't know if I would, like, Silky. I mean, the Silky in this town, that was Dennis McKinnon back in the day. I'm sure people might remember that. There's this thing going on with the 100-year celebration with the Bears this weekend. I'm sure everyone's seen it. Silky D was, I mean, good old number 85. I don't know if I can, you know, silk up Lucas. He's a little more, I don't know, buttoned up for Silky for me. But, you know, if it, again, if he's down with it, we can play around. All right. Thanks, everybody, for checking in here. We are going to get to our first interview of the show coming back after 5 o'clock. Andrew Vaughn, White Sox number 3 overall draft pick in the 2019 draft, your newest addition that hopefully you'll see at Guaranteed Rate Field somewhere down the line coming up. Quick timeout, 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN with you till 6:30. My name is Mark Harmon. As we get into some conversations I've had with one with Nick Hostetler, who's the White Sox director of scouting. That's coming up after 5:30. But the White Sox selected Andrew Vaughn, number 3 overall, their first round draft pick. First went a catcher out of Oregon State, Andy Rutschman. And then Bobby Witt Jr., whose father, big-time big leaguer, shortstop, stud, went to Kansas City number 2. But the best hitter in this draft is Andrew Vaughn, by pretty much near consensus of all scouts. Quote, he marries an excellent approach at the plate with a preternatural feel for the barrel. He projects to have at least a plus hit tool and power potential. He is expected to be someone that hits in the top 4 in the order. Now, he's a little bit undersized for a standard first baseman. He's 6 feet tall, and he throws right-handed. So, you know, your standard lefty, your standard first baseman tends to be a lefty. So this guy is a right-handed hitting first baseman. And the White Sox are the first team to take a first baseman in the top 3 since the Kansas City Royals did it all the way back in 2008, so 11 years ago. You don't see this all the time. But the White Sox love his bat, and they made him the number 3 overall pick. So let's start our conversation with Andrew right now. And I asked him to start off here, did he know when draft day came around that he was going to be with the Chicago White Sox?
Well, thanks for having me, and truly, I had really no idea, to be honest. I thought it'd be a great fit, talking to Nick when I got to meet him when he came out to Cal, and I just kind of fell in love with it, and then to hear my name called as a third pick was unbelievable.
So, how come you didn't come out after your sophomore year? You put up phenomenal numbers. I know you loved being at Cal, but was there anything else going on?
I wasn't 21 yet. I wasn't draft eligible.
Okay, I didn't realize you had to be 21 once you go to college. Okay, so I'm learning here. Was there any thought about going back for a senior year? Are you still thinking about that? I know that most people say that it's a lock that you're going to be signing up with the White Sox.
Yeah, the opportunity presents itself, so that's most likely what's going to happen.
Okay. What do you know about the White Sox, Andrew?
Right now, like I was talking with Nick, they've drafted a couple really good players in the past couple of years. Jake Berger, I know he just had surgery. Nick Madrigal, Steel Walker, which are some guys I played with. And it's a rebuild time. You know, you got Moncada coming up, doing his thing, and a couple other guys, and they're getting ready to win some championships here in the following years. And that's what Nick said and preached, and I hope I can be a part of that.
What did the White Sox want to know when they were talking to you?
Just who I was as a person. We did talk baseball, obviously. That's what it's about. They just want to know who I am, what type of person I am, and I'm just a family guy, and pretty simple. That's who I am.
Yeah, I saw some of the pictures when you were getting drafted. I'm assuming that's your girlfriend who was sitting there right with you?
Yes, that was.
She seemed pretty happy, Andrew.
She was pumped. Our whole family was pumped. There was a couple tears shed, I'll tell you that.
What's that like, if you could just explain to us regular people here who never get their name called as the number 3 overall draft pick at MLB, when you hear that name and you know that, oh my God, I got a great chance to play Major League Baseball. Obviously, you've thought about this, but then to actually have the moment happen, what would you say?
Yeah, it's just a whole moment of not knowing leading up to it. And then just everybody was sitting around, having it on the TV, and then when the commissioner came on and said my name, it was... it honestly kind of just blurred together. I just stood up and hugged all my family members and my girlfriend, and it was just an unbelievable moment.
Yeah, yeah. Where on the street as you enjoy fishing, Andrew?
I am actually up at my grandparents doing that right now. I just spent like 12 hours in the water yesterday.
Biggest fish you've ever caught?
Biggest fish, like a 35-pound king salmon.
Oh, my God. And you do that all by yourself?
Well, I reeled it in. We went out with, it was actually my dad's high school football coach. And he had a sweet boat out there. And we were using downriggers, and it went off, and I grabbed it, and it fought for like 30 minutes.
So you sound like a California kid through and through.
Yeah, you could say that. More Northern California. Put it that way.
Do you know what you have your in store here for in Chicago? You know it's like 40 degrees on opening day?
Oh, yeah. It gets cold around that. Okay. Berkeley is the warmest place. I promise you that.
Have you seen the movie The Graduate?
The Graduate? Oh, I don't think I have.
I just aged myself, and I'm sure a bunch of our WGN listeners. But Dustin Hoffman, he's chasing a girl. It's at Cal Berkeley. He doesn't have quite the career path that you have. He's trying to figure it out as a college kid. It's a hell of a film, Andrew. I highly recommend.
Well, I might have to look into it.
Yeah, it falls under the classic category. So here, tell me what it was. Like playing in the Cape Cod League for you, using the wood bats and maybe proving to yourself that, okay, I can do this with what I'm going to need in the future.
Yeah, definitely. The biggest thing for me with the wood bat was just shortening my swing, and a wood bat's definitely a little heavier than a metal bat, so getting used to that was kind of nice. You just got to trust your hands, and playing the Cape is unbelievable. You're facing the best pitchers on every college team. You're getting every Friday guy coming out the first four innings, and then the next Friday guy the next four innings, and then you're probably going to get a closer from a Power 5 school coming out. So it's a challenge, and it's really fun. And when you're playing on middle school fields, there's nothing like playing in Wareham when the gravel infield turns black when it rains. so that was interesting, but it was a lot of fun.
When do you think you knew, I don't know, going to Cal, maybe your freshman year, maybe before that, that – you know what? I probably have the talent to play Major League Baseball.
I think it was my freshman summer getting invited to Team USA. I was just a freshman. That was a pretty great moment.
Yeah, because people will say, well, he's a little undersized for first baseman. He's a right-handed hitting first baseman, but yet he hits the living daylights out of the baseball. So you're not like the prototypical guy. So maybe you were, I don't know, did that contribute to you perhaps just like maybe not knowing as soon as say the 6'6" dude who looks like exactly what you know a Major League Baseball player in the dream world you know scouts would love?
Yeah, I mean definitely puts a little chip on my shoulder, just goes to show that I just want to prove people wrong and just go out and do my thing. And if you can swing the bat, I heard it all the time in high school. We had a coach that said if you can hit, you can play, it don't matter. And that just kind of stuck with me.
Yeah. And so you've got a seemingly great eye here, Andrew, and you've got power. How do you balance when you're aggressive and when you're like, you know what, if you want to walk me, I'll let one of my teammates step up and do it?
I think I always go up aggressive. That's the biggest thing, just it's a calm aggressiveness. I mean, if I get my pitch to hit, I'm going to be all over it, but if I don't get a pitch to hit me at bat, I know I got a guy behind me that's going to do some damage. He'll probably get a pitch because after a walk, the pitcher's obviously going to want to get a first-pitch strike and go at the guy. So that's just the biggest thing for me, is just being patient and just letting things happen.
I like that. Let's continue our conversation with Andrew Vaughn coming up after a quick timeout here. And a reminder, bring your family of four to a White Sox game for as low as $49. It's with the family four-pack. You get four tickets, four hot dogs, four drinks, four chips. It's presented by Country Financial. Prepare for your financial future one simple step at a time at TakeSimpleSteps.com. For tickets, visit WhiteSox.com/4packs and enter the promo code VALUE. More with the White Sox first-round draft pick, Andrew Vaughn, coming on back here on White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN.
At the wall, the 380, gone! A three-run homer for Tim Anderson. 3-1 White Sox.
Back to White Sox Weekly on 720 WGN.
White Sox Weekly continuing indeed. Hope you're having a great Saturday. Mark Harmon with you. Speaking with Andrew Vaughn, who's the White Sox first-round draft pick number 3 overall. The interview sponsored by Mazda of Orland Park and ZoomZoomNation.com, where they're always trying to make your car shopping fun. Andrew Vaughn, as we continue our conversation here, right-handed hitting first baseman, a little bit undersized. Who did you, or who do you most pattern your game after? Who do you look up to?
The biggest guy right now would definitely be Posey, just going through college and later in high school, just because of the way he goes about his business. He's such a professional. He just does everything right, and then even off the field, he's so special, doing the stuff with research for kids with cancer, and just stuff like that. He really makes me want to be better.
Who did you say? I think you might have cut up for a second.
Buster Posey.
Buster Posey, okay.
Yeah, with the Giants.
Yeah, yeah. Does that make you a Giants fan?
Growing up, I was a bit of a Giants fan, definitely. But I'm not a huge baseball watcher, to be honest. I'd rather play it.
Interesting. What sport do you watch the most?
If you want me to be honest, it's fishing.
Oh, my God. So you wake up, like, Saturday morning, 8 a.m. fishing show?
I'd rather go fishing. Hopefully I'm not watching TV on a Saturday morning.
Okay. I mean, I've watched fishing, Andrew. Those shows are, I mean, I got some work to do to get to the where I'm entertained here. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Is that maybe from your dad, spending time with your pops out on the lake? Where does it come from?
Yeah, definitely dad and both grandpas I have.
Uh-huh.
Big fishermen.
And you after you catch them, do you come home and grill them up? Is that the deal?
That happens sometimes. Yes, it does. Just for catching trout, I definitely do that.
Okay.
But bass, I won't cook those things. They're nasty.
Okay. As a kid, Andrew, I just want to, you know, be on the level with you here. I we would go smelt fishing. You know what a smelt is?
Yeah.
Are you impressed?
Oh yeah. I've never caught one actually, but I know what it is.
Yeah, there are these little guys. You just throw a net down there. I think you,
yeah, you net them.
Yeah.
I definitely used a bait that looks like a smelt to catch trout.
Okay. Okay. So where's the best place to go fishing out in Cali?
I really like to fish the Sacramento River, the upper Sacramento River by Redding. There's so many trout in there. Let me fly fish. I got a buddy that has a boat that we go out there every once in a while, and that's a treat. Some days you can catch 40 fish. Some days, like the other day, we only caught 5, but you're still always catching fish on that river.
So you're telling me that you stand there in the middle of the river with that suit little thing on, and you're sending the am I painting the correct picture here? Help me out.
A little bit. We're in the boat.
Oh, you're in the boat.
I'm not a big wader guy. Sometimes if I steelhead fish back home on the Russian River, we'll get in waders, but that's very rare.
So what's the difference between fly fishing and regular fishing?
Fly fishing has a lot more going on and a lot more patience.
A lot more patience, huh? So can you tell us your strategy?
When you're fly fishing, you got to expect less.
Okay.
So you're that's going... what I tell myself.
So it's like going for the big kill.
Exactly.
Okay.
Going for the trophy.
So basically, you're going up. If we put it in a baseball term, you're going up to the plate. You're down 3 in the ninth, and you're not willing to take a walk, and you're going to try to take the ball to the ballpark, hit a grand slam, win the game. And sometimes it's going to happen. Most times not. But that one time when you do it, it's going to be amazing.
And it is special. Nothing like it.
See, we brought that all around. So
there you go, connections everywhere.
There we go. Who else have you connected with in the White Sox organization other than Nick?
It was Nick, I believe. Their assistant scouting director came with Nick. He was a great guy, and then I got to talk to the GM over the phone after the draft.
Okay,
and then that's really it in the area scout. He was awesome getting to sit down and meet with him. And that's really it so far. I'm looking forward to meeting everybody and getting connected with the organization.
Are you setting goals as to, you know, how quick you want to progress?
Not necessarily how quick I want to get there, but I definitely want to get there and do my thing and just get better and join that team. Hopefully win a lot of games and maybe win a championship.
When White Sox fans get to see Andrew Vaughn on the field at Guaranteed Rate Field, they will see, like, how would you describe yourself, Nick? A guy that's, what would you say?
I'm going to go up there and give them my all. I'm going to take my at-bats, and hopefully they're all good ones. I mean, my goal is to be ready every pitch that's coming at me. Just want to play exciting. Want to make the fans happy.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing, and wins definitely do that. I mean, also, home runs help that, but you're not going up there trying to do that every time. But hopefully we can put on a good show for him.
And you gave up pitching. Do you still have any, I don't know, let's say it's the ninth inning and you guys are down 16-1. Could you get on the bump and still do it?
No, for sure. I definitely could. That's always in the back pocket. haven't been a bullpen in quite a while, but hey, you still get it every play.
Yeah. You miss it?
Not too much.
Okay. Okay. And if they stuck you at third base, how would you feel over there?
I think I'd be comfortable. I need a little bit of time over there because I haven't been over there in quite a while since high school, but I think I could do it.
Did they ask you whether you could play multiple positions? Was that discussed?
Yeah, for sure. They definitely asked if I thought I could play it, if I was comfortable there. And I told them I'll play wherever. I just want to be in the lineup.
Have you played any outfield?
When I was younger, yeah. I played a little bit of left field.
Okay. All right. But you do see yourself as a first baseman?
Yeah, for the time being.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, Andrew, congratulations. Great to catch up with you. And White Sox fans are looking forward to seeing you on the field down the line here and winning a World Series, most importantly. That's you're a part of hopefully something real special here. And, it's a great group. You're going to love the guys. I can tell you that with a ton of confidence. So you ended up in a good spot, and Chicago's a phenomenal city. Do you like pizza?
Do I like pizza? My favorite pizza place growing up was actually called Old Chicago Pizza.
Is that right?
You can ask anybody that.
What do you get on it?
Deep dish. What do I get? Sausage, pepperoni. I think that's it.
Oh my God! So you're gonna fit right in here.
Oh yes.
We got some.
I'm gonna make sure I run a little more often if I start eating that pizza all the time. But
well, right. But everybody, you gotta have a cheat day once a week or whatever it is. Come on.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're not playing center field. You're playing first base once a week, and we can have a slice or two. And by the way, I recommend trying them all. People will tell you this is the best, that's the best. You got to figure that out on your own.
All right.
Yeah. So
I'll take that to heart. I'll do that.
All right, Andrew. Congrats again. Be well, and thanks for joining us on White Sox Weekly.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, there you go, Andrew Vaughn. Curtis is sitting there smiling from ear to ear with the pizza talk. You love that, didn't you, Curtis? He's a deep dish guy, California kid.
Great way to get a Chicago connection out of the California kid. I was surprised the pizza place he went to was Old Chicago Pizza or Old Town Chicago Pizza. He's going to fit right in perfectly.
I mean, what a just a nice young man, right? I was impressed.
With his passion for fishing, I'm surprised he didn't become a professional fisherman.
He loves the fishing. I talked to him for a little bit after the interview, and I said, you know, we've got this big Lake Michigan out here. I wouldn't necessarily eat the fish out of there, but I suppose you could. He said, oh, don't you worry. I'm already checking it out. So, I mean, this is a real passion for him. But interesting selection. The White Sox going for hitting with Andrew Vaughn. We'll get a little explanation from that coming on back here with White Sox Director of Scouting, Nick Hostetler. He's coming up after the 5:30 news. We'll talk about Andrew and the rest of the draft as well. Nick is next and after news in 2 minutes on 720 WGN.
WGN, the team's flagship radio station.
You're listening to White Sox Weekly on the home of the Sox, 720 WGN.
The greatest draft in the history of the Chicago White Sox. Did they just have it? Welcome back, White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. What say you, Nick Hostetler? Thank you for jumping on here, the Chicago White Sox scouting director, our leader. And are you breathing the nice sigh of relief that it's over, Nick?
I am. I had a nice about 4.5 hour drive home after the draft. Gave me a little bit of time to decompress, get all my stress out of me, and just kind of relax and enjoy the open road.
So, what excites you most about this class? And then we'll start picking apart individual players.
Sure. You know, I think the main thing that excites me the most is just how different this was in regards to the type of player we brought in than any other class that I've been a part of here with the White Sox and in the drafts that, you know, from 2008 on. So, you know, it was different from the standpoint there's a lot of high school talent, and it was different from the standpoint of how we managed our pool money. So I think the way we went about it, the way that we adjusted, and the way that we were prepared, I think, was what excites me the most about this draft in 2019.
So, do you know why the White Sox have something in common with the 2008 Kansas City Royals?
I do not, but I hope it's good.
and so do Sox fans. The Chicago White Sox, under the guidance of Nick Hostetler and all your and everybody else who's working with you, I know you do not do this alone. You're the first.
No, not at all.
You're the first team since 08 to take a first baseman in the top three. Now, do you remember who the Royals took in 08?
I do. It's Eric Hosmer.
That's correct. I think that worked out fairly well for them. Correct me if I'm wrong, but they did win a World Series, and Hosmer was a huge part of it. So that wouldn't be terrible if that happened with Andrew Vaughn. But tell us why, you know, a guy who's, you know, seems like, it, I mean, I guess he can play some third, too, but do you see him as a first baseman? Tell us why you wanted him at number three.
Well, I think the main thing we saw with him is his elite. The bat is, you can put any word you want on it, elite, premium, top of the line, like anything you want to put on it, you can put on it. It has that potential. He's a guy that, you know, I've said it before, he rolls out of bed and he swings the bat. I mean, he just hits and hits. And, you know, I think we liked, from a physical standpoint, from a tool standpoint, we loved Andrew Vaughn, the hitter. We loved Andrew Vaughn, the first baseman. We loved Andrew Vaughn, what he can bring to a team from a data standpoint, from an analytics standpoint. We love the hard hit rate, the amount of balls he hits with exit velos above 95 and above 105. We like the launch angle. We liked all of those things. And from a person standpoint, off the field in the clubhouse, we love the lead by example, great teammate that he brings to this. So all of the pieces for Andrew Vaughn, we felt very comfortable in. And every one of those pieces of that puzzle lined up perfectly with the other.
So I talked to you at Guaranteed Rate Field, I guess it was Saturday before the draft. You put me off well, Nick, in a very, very graceful, nice Nick Hostetler way. I'm like, so who are you taking? Like, well, we know who's going number one and number two, but I'm not so certain who will you know, who we're going to go with at three. I'm just curious, like, when did you know that if Andrew Vaughn was going to be there and the first two went the way you thought it would, that you knew that this was your pick?
We started hearing rumors. The rumors have been going on about what was going to happen up top, and this team was going to pass, and because of this or that. You know, and it really ramped up on Saturday night into Sunday, where all the rumors hit of, like, oh, the Orioles are going to go this route. They're going to take Vaughn, or they're going to take Bleday, or they're going to do this. And I think when it came down to it, and it's one of the great qualities of Rick and Kenny, they're very quick to calm the storm when things like that happen. And, you know, they were the whole time saying, like, hey, let's keep our focus on where we anticipate this being. Like, this is going to settle back in. We went through every scenario on Sunday. We went through everything we possibly could on all of the candidates. And, you know, we woke up Monday morning, headed into the ballpark. And at that point, I think we all kind of figured it settled back in as Adley Rutschman was going to go one and Andrew Vaughn or Bobby Witt was going to go two. And then, you know, we had our pick between Andrew Vaughn, CJ Abrams, JJ Bleday, and those types. So, you know, I think we knew come Sunday night into Monday morning that Andrew was going to more than likely be the guy we went down that direction, that road with, and we just needed a couple things to take care of on our end and check in, and we did that, and we felt really confident at that point, probably about mid-Monday afternoon, that he was the guy we were going to go with.
Fair enough. I guess telling us things you can't tell us, but what type of questions do you ask these guys when you're sitting down with them? I mean, when you talk to the players, Nick, they all say that it's not so much about on the field. You want to get to know the guy. So, I mean, how do you go about doing that?
You have to find something when you're meeting with them to talk to that'll bring out the true person. Find something in their background or that they're passionate about away from the field that can let you kind of that they will let you in. And in Andrew's case, it was when we started talking about his family. We started talking about his sister, his mom. She dealt with him some health things and how he had to handle that, and talked about his dad and, you know, fishing and some stuff he likes to do off the field. When we did that, at that point, he really, he never went into it with a guard up or a wall, but he really let anything down, and he really let us in on who he was as a person. And we really start to get to know him. He felt very comfortable with us. He started talking about his off the field, his girlfriend, where she's from, how they met, certain things like that. We had a great hour meeting with him where we just, I mean, really, it truly was just three guys sitting around just, you know, talking. And it really, it was, we walked out of there knowing that at that point, like, he was capable of being a guy to carry, you know, to carry a legacy and carry a franchise.
Yeah, and then, so you're sitting there, right? And you know that these guys, whoever it is, from Andrew on down to your 40th round pick, they all want to impress you. So that, you got to have your antenna up, right? And then, I mean, but it would be awkward too. You don't want to like try to trip guys up either. And no one's perfect. Also, like if somebody has stuff in their past, it's like, where, you know, how do you ask questions like, well, what's the biggest thing that you did wrong that you learned from? Is that? I mean, that's
we usually know going into it. You know, some stuff, some background stuff, some things we want to know. And look, these meetings can bring. They can bring everything under the sun that we, some things we're expecting, some things we're not. We had a guy this year show up 40 minutes late to it. You know, that was a concern for us. It was like, okay, why was he 40 minutes late? What was the reason? We had some stuff, some injury stuff we had to ask certain players. And, you know, we just straight up and asked them. We see how honest they are in telling us. And how, you know, you can read, when you do these things over the course of, I think it's 19 years for me. Mike Shirley was with me on most of them. He's done it for about the same amount of time. When you've done these meetings, you can read people well, and you kind of know, you know, when they're trying to pull the wool over your eyes, so to speak, or they're just being honest. So, you know, especially when you're dealing with 18 to 21-year-old kids, the one thing about them is they're not great liars. They may be able to put on a front. We've had a few guys over the course of my career that has tried, but you can usually normally see through a lot of stuff.
Who would you say over the years, when you talked to him for the first time, like, whoa, this dude's intelligence is off the charts? I mean, you got some pretty smart people running around the White Sox organization.
Yeah, you know, Vaughn was one of them. Andrew was one of them. He's just really... He's able to process things so easily. He's able to slow things down. Nick Madrigal was one of them. You know, and what I think one of the things that's exciting for me is they're all different. You know, the guys, and normally I only meet with the first-round pick. Our area scouts meet with all of the players that they turn in. But, you know, for me, the personalities are so different from Zach Collins, Zach Birdie, Jake Berger, Nick Madrigal, to now Andrew Vaughn. Like, they're all different in their own right, you know, and Berger's got a little bit more personality and he's out there a little bit more. Zach's a little bit more quiet, dry sense of humor, but he's got a little there. He's really a funny kid. You know, Madrigal's all business. You talk to Nick and it's like, let's go. He's amped up. It's like he's on drinking about 20 Red Bulls a day. And, you know, and Andrew's very calm, and Andrew Vaughn was very calm, and he was very, you know, patient, you know, when you talk to him about it, and he learned a lot about it from fishing, and it was just, they all have such different personalities. It's kind of exciting.
It's funny that you say that about Nick, because I just had him on White Sox Weekly, and just straight on point, just ready to go. Which, by the way, he just got the promotion fairly recently to Double A. What would you say about that?
Yeah, that's exciting to see. I mean, anytime you see, you know, he had a really good stretch of the last, I think, like 17 to 20 games where he was hitting, you know, 320-ish and a couple home runs, a bunch of doubles, stole a bunch of bags, and he's playing great defense, and he earned it, you know. And that's the one thing I'll say about Chris Getz and his staff. Like, they're not just giving away promotions left and right. Nick started it at high A. I'm sure he probably wasn't expecting that. He was probably expected to start a little bit higher, but they challenged him, and he rose to the challenge. And, you know, and I think that's one of the great things about our player development staff is there's not going to be anything given. These guys have to earn it, and they challenge guys, and they did that with Nick, and challenge accepted, and he conquered that challenge. Now on to the next one.
Let's talk, and White Sox director of scouting with us here, Nick Hostetler on 720 WGN. Let's go second round. Matt Thompson, Cy Ranch High School, ERA his senior year, .87. Last time I checked, that's pretty good. 13-0, 124 strikeouts. Was committed to Texas A&M. You guys making him a second round pick. I'm assuming that you wouldn't have done that if you didn't think you could sign him.
Yeah, we've got a pretty good idea on all of the top 10 rounds, guys, we pretty much know going into it what it's going to take to make them a member of the organization. We talk to the agent, the player, prior to the selection to make sure they're comfortable with us and we're comfortable with them and what they're looking for financially. So, yeah, we feel really excited about adding Matt. And, you know, and I think the one thing with Matthew is that the athleticism, the upside, it's tremendous. He's not even came close to scratching the surface on what he can do. And, you know, coming off of last summer, he was a consensus first-round guy that battled some inconsistencies this spring on a very good high school team with his teammate, J.J. Gosko. And I think he went about 36, right around that range. So that's a pretty good pitching staff to have in high school. But he's ready to go. I think we're excited. You know, we're looking forward to getting him out there and going and starting to develop a path. But he was one we targeted really the last couple weeks as being a guy we really wanted to add.
Conversation with Nick Hostetler continuing after quick timeout here. Join us at Guaranteed Rate Field as the White Sox take on the New York Yankees on Saturday, June 15th. That's a 6:10 first pitch. First 20,000 fans will get a White Sox Hawaiian shirt presented by Beggar's Pizza. Visit WhiteSox.com to purchase your tickets today. I am going to promote a young. I've seen some highlights of a 3-year-old. His name is Cade. Lefty swing, Curtis. I mean, just power. Good. I would almost say good strike zone command as well. Maybe we can get him on the White Sox radar here coming back.
Like a Yoan Moncada,
like a high of the zone? Like a 3-year-old Moncada. I mean, that's what I mean. I think Cade could get it done. Head to the park after work for Bleachers and Brews. Get one bleacher seat and two beers for $22 all season long. You got to be 21 and over with a valid ID. Bleachers and Brews, presented by Budweiser. To purchase tickets, visit WhiteSox.com/brew and enter that promo code Brew. His older brother Chase is pretty solid too. He's 6, so but. They might be late on that one. All right, coming on back, Nick Hosta, the White Sox Director of Scouting, as we get deeper into the draft. That's next on White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. Join us Friday, June 14th. Sox host the Yankees, 7:10. It's rock and roll night. Fireworks presented by Guaranteed Rate. Guaranteed Rate is your home team throughout the season, and the mortgage process gets started today at rate.com. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com. So as we continue our conversation with White Sox Director of Scouting, Nick Hostetler, in the third round, the White Sox drafted Andrew Dahlquist, who's a high school pitcher, throws in the mid-90s. It's a very interesting draft pick because he's committed to Arizona. So he's not going to sign for third-round money. The White Sox are going to have to overpay to get him to not go to college, which is one of the reasons in rounds 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, they took guys who were seniors in college who they don't necessarily have to overpay but might be able to underpay for, guys who don't have as many options. But Dahlquist is a guy that they obviously liked a ton, high-ceiling guy. So as we continue with Nick, what do you like so much about Andrew?
You know, Dahlquist was a little bit different from the standpoint we weren't expecting him to be there in the third round. You know, with Matt, Matthew, we felt pretty confident he was going to get down to our second round pick, just was battling some of the inconsistencies of the spring with his stuff. But with Dahlquist, I'm not sure any of us were really expecting him to get down there. And we had to adjust on the fly at that point. That the end of the first day when the second round was over, we evaluated our board. We put the guys in order that we had interest in. And I would like to say we slept on it. I'm not sure that any of the staff from Jeremy, Rick, Kenny, down through all the guys in the room, I don't think any of us really slept much that night because we were contemplating how to handle the next day. And Dahlquist's situation was one that was unique, and it presented us with the opportunity to add what we felt was another projectable, high-ceiling frontline arm. So we took that opportunity and ran with it.
Explain, then, what were you most concerned about? Why was it a long night of non-sleep?
Well, I think the main thing was it was trying to decide what direction and route we wanted to take the next day. You know, you could take one where you spread your pool money out over the next, from third round to the 10th round and get guys that are around that slot value, or you can essentially spend up on a guy you feel is worthy of that number and go get him. And then you got to make it up on the back end financially. So we were bantering that back and forth all night through text messages and emails. And you know, I know a lot of our guys were up at night watching film, trying to figure out just where we were and how comfortable we would be with it. So I think we left the room about 11:30 midnight, and we came back in the next day. And I think all the way up until probably about an hour before the pick, we had not made a decision on how, which direction we were going to go. So we finally all met and came to a group conclusion that we needed to get aggressive and go get Drew Dahlquist. That's what we did.
White Sox scouting director Nick Hostetler with us here on 720 WGN as we review the draft on White Sox Weekly. That gets me so jealous, Nick. I want to be in that room making these decisions. I love my career over here, but that just sounds like a lot of fun.
It is, and you know what, I hope, hopefully, you know, God willing, I can do this for the next 20 years and be in a position to sit here and make picks and be a part of this great organization. I mean, hopefully this continues, because it's an adrenaline rush. I mean, it's 3 days of the highest of highs. I mean, you just get going, and I mean, you don't eat, you don't sleep, but it's okay. Like, we know that going in, like, that's what we work all year for, is to have these 3 days to get after it. There's phones going everywhere. You know, everybody's making calls. You know, you have to tell yourself when you leave the draft room, like, hey, none of that went on there is anything personal. There's stress that comes into it. There's passion, and that's what we love about it. You know, the passion and the energy that it brings. And, you know, hopefully the organization feels that shot in the arm when these players sign and get out.
Well, and, you know, for you, too, you want to be able to say whether it goes right or wrong, whether this ends up with, you know, whatever, you being wherever you want to be in your career or not, to say that you did what you wanted to do, right? Like, I wanted to take that guy. It seemed like a risk. Some people were telling me no, but I'm sitting in the seat for a reason, so this is why I'm making this selection. Right or wrong? Like, you have to have conviction on a guy, right? I mean, that's, and believe in yourself.
Absolutely, and it starts with the trust you have in your staff. And that, when I say staff, it just doesn't mean our scouts. We have a great staff of guys that work very hard, from our area scouts to our cross-checkers, but also all of the other parts of the staff that we have in the office, from our data and analytics team, you know, trusting them to have the right information, to read the right information the right way. The staff that worked closely with me in Chicago, being Dan Fabian and Jeff Lockman and Emily Blady and Devin Pickett and Daniel Zion, all of them. And then it goes to Jeremy Haber, you know, Chris Getz, Rick Hahn, Kenny Williams. I mean, it's everybody has to work in step, and we have to be in this together. But ultimately, look, if this doesn't work, like, that falls squarely on my shoulders, and I'm the one that, you know, needs to be replaced if it doesn't go the right way. And then fully take responsibility for it. But, you know, having trust in those people around you makes it a lot easier for me to sleep at night, knowing that we're making the best effort to make the right picks each and every year, each and every pick.
A couple more minutes here with Nick Hostetler. Were you surprised that the shortstop C.J. Abrams went all the way 6th to San Diego? A lot of people had him going number 4.
Yeah, there was a little bit of talk with that. You know, it's funny because a lot of us joke around when we're out seeing games. Like, we come about mid-May, you really know who everybody's on, because that team's at every game. And I think each time I went and saw C.J. play, I think I saw him play 4 times in the last month of the season, and each time it was either the Padres director, their assistant director was there every single time. Same with the Marlins. So, you know, we kind of knew at that point who was on players. And the scouting director with the Padres is a good friend of mine, and him and I texted a little bit, and Mark was saying just, you know, he was shocked that C.J. Abrams got down to that to 6, and he was expecting to go 4. But I don't think the Marlins are disappointed in getting the SEC home run leader and J.J. Blade player of the year. And I think the Padres are really excited to get a talent like C.J. Abrams as well.
Yeah, I mean, I was just watching his tape. He looked pretty damn impressive to me. And
he is.
Did, you know, every single one of the top selections here. All right, before you go, I know you're excited about a couple of Puerto Rican high school prospects. Victor Torres, mm-hmm. who you took in the 11th round, and Misael Gonzalez Acosta, who you took in the 12th round. Victor's a catcher. What'd you like about these guys?
Yeah, Torres is a guy that can really catch and throw. He's a guy that in the last 2 years, I think you've seen, we've taken 4 Puerto Rico players, and mainly the main reason is because Juan Alvarez, who is our Southeast cross checker, is one of the best. I don't want to go too far here and praise Nwani too much, because I don't want him to ever leave us. But adding him to our staff 2 years ago has been one of the best hires we've ever made. I mean, he has made an impact for us in South Florida and Puerto Rico. And, you know, he was a direct result of Kelvin Maldonado last year, and he's a direct result of these two players this year. And Torres is a guy that can flat out catch and throw. We like some of the ability with the bat. We see some, you know, the thing about Puerto Rico, people have a misconception on, those players don't play all the time. You would think that they play constantly every day. They only play once a week, and they play on the weekends. That's it. So getting those guys out and getting Torres some more at-bats is going to be important for him, just to increase that bat and to go along with the catching ability. And Gonzalez is a player that came to our workout in Chicago. He showed us some power that we weren't expecting to see. We love the bat on this kid, and I'm not going to put him up into James Beard as far as the running as fast as Beard, but he's awful close. Wow. If Beard's an 80 runner, Gonzalez is like a 79 runner. I mean, it's one step behind James Beard, and we added him knowing that, you know, him and Beard together could make for a formidable pair in the lower levels as they develop through.
And let me just rewind back for a second. Was Dahlquist surprised that you guys selected him?
We called, you know, the agent and I had been in contact for about 3 days. And in knowing where he was signed at University of Arizona, knowing what it was going to take to sign him. As we progressed, I think that we went to bed the night before. I think he was probably expecting that we weren't going to take him. But when I called back the next morning and told the agent, like, hey, I think we're going to do this. Let's see if we can't get something done here. He called Drew and told him. So I do think he was a little shocked we were back into it. I do know there was a team right not far from us in that round that was going to take him. So I think he was probably anticipating going to that team. And then when we called there about an hour before the draft, told him we were going to take him, I think that probably shocked him a little bit. But at the same time, when I talked to the young man, he was over the moon excited. He was really pumped up, and he's ready to go.
That's awesome. The local guy, DJ Gladney. No, in the 16th rounder, third baseman. Everybody loves local, Nick.
They do, and we've known DJ for a long time. Nathan Durst and his crew with the ACE program has known DJ since he's been probably 12 or 13 years old. So they've known him for a long time. JJ Lally, our area scout, really liked DJ. Brought him to our workout. He was there as well. He showed some power there. I don't think any of us, maybe even including DJ, were expecting. And he's a kid that we're cautiously optimistic. I think we're going to be able to get something done with DJ and bring him into the fold and make him a part of the White Sox family. And but our area scout, JJ Lally, and then Nathan Durst was very influential in making that pick.
Nick, always great to talk to you. Congrats on the draft. Wish you a ton of success, of course. And by the way, Kyle Kubot's coming up on White Sox Weekly. You got a question for him? Anything I should bring
Kyle
up?
Kyle Kubot. Yeah, the scout that signed Kyle, Matt Price, a good friend of mine. And I know he's rooting for Kyle as well as the rest of us. So I know those Royals guys still love him, so I hope he gets up there. Hopefully he's ready to go up to the big leagues at some point and beat the Royals.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an awesome story. The guy's 26 years old, having a breakout year, was the White Sox minor league pitcher of the month. For those of us who peak later in life, I'm including myself in that one, Nick. I root for guys like that. So,
yeah, I'm still waiting for that peak moment for me. So we'll get there.
you're well on your way, sir. So congrats on all the success. And hey, we'll talk soon, Nick. Thanks for taking time.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate the time.
Nick Hostetler. All right, let's. You will hear Kyle Kubat. I think you'll enjoy the conversation. Come up after 6 o'clock here. Quick timeout. News coming up. David Jennings will have that for you. 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly. 720 WGN. Pleased to have on the White Sox minor league pitcher of the month, Kyle Kubat, who's joining us now. And Kyle, you have had quite the journey coming from Kansas City, undrafted all the way back in 2015, finding your way to the White Sox. You've been up and down the system, and now to be the minor league pitcher of the month. Congratulations. That's an awesome accomplishment.
I appreciate it. It is a an accomplishment, and I'm honored to be named a player pitcher of the month for May, and it's a humbling feeling, and you know it's a long season, so I just got to keep working hard every outing and every day I get to the field.
So you start the year at Winston-Salem, you get bumped up to Birmingham. Last year, you got all the way up to Charlotte and had to start. What would you say, because people are saying that, I guess, your slider has improved. What do you point to as far as, you know, my success is on the uptick? Any particular reason?
Yes, I've definitely been working on my slider and my curveball, so the breaking stuff. It's been average throughout my career, so I've been committed to working on those two pitches throughout my professional career, and just being able to do what I do best, throw strikes, get ahead of hitters, attack the zone with, you know, 3 to 4 different pitches depending upon the day, and attack hitters and get them out, and, you know, less than 4 pitches, and see what happens from there.
And so you're a college guy. You went to Nebraska. You played for Darren Erstead. We had Aaron Bummer on last week, and he spoke glowingly about your coach. I know you have the same feelings. What was it like for you in college? And I guess he was holding a vision for you that perhaps you weren't holding for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, he's more than just a coach. So he's in your corner for the rest of your life. And you've played for him and you've known him, and he's a fantastic human being and a fantastic coach. And, you know, college is, it's difficult at times. You're away at home from home for the first time, and it can be stressful. So there were times in college where, you know, I struggled as just a person, not even on the ball field. So to have him just be there for me as a mentor, not just a coach, is very, very rewarding to have him in my corner, and I can't thank that man enough for making me the ball player and the man I am today.
I mean, you were born in Omaha, correct? So that had to be a bit of a dream for you, if not a huge dream, to be able to play for Nebraska.
Wearing the red from Omaha, born and raised. Yeah, it's a cool feeling. I was in the stands. I was at Rosenblatt Stadium when Nebraska made the College World Series, and to be able to put on the Nebraska uniform was an even better feeling.
And when you were coming in the minors, Kyle Kubat joining us here on White Sox Weekly, the White Sox Minor League Pitcher of the Month, pitching for the Birmingham Barons right now on 720 WGN. You get in that minor league clubhouse for the first time. You're older than over half the team, Kyle. Did you feel like, I don't know, like more mature than your teammates? Like it was sort of like you just maybe had an edge, so to speak, that you had already been through college?
You know, who I'm with now is who I was with last year, and
yeah,
they know who I am. And you know, being in the minors for 4 years and being in college, you know, give them what I've learned through college in my 4 or 5 years of minor league ball, and help them get better as well. I feel like a little kid just still being able to play baseball, and I know I'm a little older, but I still feel like a little kid playing ball.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in my mid-40s, Kyle. I still feel like a little kid. You don't want to lose that. I think it's a good thing. It gives you that energy. Yeah. But I
absolutely not.
But then there's the whole, hey, he's 26. Is he ever going to make it to the big leagues thing? That's kind of, you know, a pressure that a lot of guys feel. And I've seen some comments from you where you're trying to get there, but you also don't want to make your entire career about if I get to the big leagues. Like, it's just awesome that you get to play professional baseball, period. So that seems like something that you had to, you know, I don't know, work on to get yourself in a comfortable place where you don't have that whole weight on you all the time.
Well, like I said earlier, I think it was in maybe April, I had an interview with MILB, and it was kind of saying the same thing. And I was undrafted, so to still be here after, you know, 5 years in pro ball is a blessing. And I'm just having fun. Take everything as it comes, good days, bad days, good outings, bad outings. Just being able to be a part of professional ball for 5 years, make so many connections, meet so many guys, you know, you want to make it to the big league. That's obviously a big goal for everyone who plays this game. But to be able to play this in minor leagues for, you know, 5 years after not being drafted, it's a blessing and it's humbling, and I'm thankful to just be able to still throw a baseball.
What were you going to do if baseball didn't come calling?
I don't know. I got my degree. Happy about that. Nebraska has some opportunities for graduates for, you know, traveling abroad, internships and stuff like that. So once baseball's done, I'll figure out that. Probably want to travel the world a little bit, get into coaching, go from there. But right now, it's being able to throw baseball and staying healthy.
No doubt, no doubt. What's the degree in?
Nutrition, health science.
Okay. So you're going to be...
It was.
Yeah.
It was chemical engineering, but then I decided I wanted to enjoy college a little bit.
I support that decision, Kyle, just so you know. And...
Yeah.
And you learn some things that I don't know, it seems maybe practical to your career, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Being able to understand how to eat, how to stay healthy, and use it for an athlete's lifestyle. Obviously, it's very hard when we're on the road for, you know, 6-7 months out of the year. So you got to stay disciplined. And it definitely helps to be able to understand how to train your body and eat healthy in order to get through an entire baseball season, because it is long. It is a grind. I know it is a cliche phrase. We say it all the time, but once you get in it, you're like, holy cow, it actually is a grind. So to be able to understand, you know, what your body's doing, how you need to properly fuel it in order to get through an entire season is critical to, you know, playing at your peak performance.
Do you allow yourself to go to Waffle House?
Absolutely. There are no Waffle Houses in Nebraska. I think the closest one is Kansas City. So whenever I have a chance to go to Waffle House, you have to go to Waffle House. And then when you're in spring training, you got to go to In-N-Out.
Uh-huh.
Have to go there and, you know, snack on a burger and some fries. So, yeah, you got to have a cheat meal every now and then.
You go animal style on that burger?
Sometimes I do. I'm just more of a traditional cheeseburger guy, but sometimes I'll go animal style.
Uh-huh. What's the order at Waffle House? Do you have that down to a T also?
Yeah, what is it? What is it? The America's Plate or whatever they call it. four eggs, bacon, waffle, some hash browns. So,
so good.
Fairly simple.
See, people dog Waffle House. You're just not living your life the correct way. Waffle House does great work. It's not an everyday.
I mean, absolutely. You get off the bus at 2 a.m. sometimes, and there's a Waffle House right across the street, and they, you know, you got 20 minor leaguers just bombard a Waffle House at 2 a.m. So, I mean, it's good times.
So, okay, just take me into that world for 1 second, because I don't know why I get jealous of this, but I just do. You guys play a night game in wherever, and then right after the game, you'll get on the bus and go and travel to the next location. You'll get in, you'll eat, and then you'll go to bed and get up and play a game the next day. Is that how that works?
That just depends on how far the travel is. So right now, actually, we're on a bus right now. We left at 9 a.m. We're headed to Mobile, Alabama, but if we're going from Birmingham to Jacksonville, Florida, we'll play 7 o'clock, finish the game at 10-ish, and then the bus will leave at 11 o'clock at night, because that's about an 8-hour drive with a time change going from central to eastern time zone. So those trips will leave and go through the middle of the night, get there at 6, you know, 7 in the morning, go take a nap throughout the day, and be back on the bus at about 3-4 in the afternoon to go play.
We're going to continue our conversation with Kyle Kubot coming on back here. People are texting in on Waffle House. Some people saying you got to get the chicken waffles. I don't know about getting the chicken. That's aggressive. I think you got to stick to basics. Eggs, pancakes, mainly waffles, of course, bacon. Start doing the chicken. I mean, where does Waffle House get their chicken? That's an over-the-top move there. I give you credit for doing that. I don't know if I'm that risky. All right, Kyle Kubot coming on back here. The White Sox
at least Kyle Kubot's minor league baseball team, which is the Birmingham Barons right now, they play a game on the bus that is pretty aggressive. I think you'll enjoy the conversation. That's next, 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. Thanks for checking us out this afternoon. White Sox Weekly till the bottom of the hour. Then I get to talk with you until the till 7 o'clock, and then Amy Guth will be along for the Saturday night special. We're having a conversation with Kyle Kubot, who's the White Sox minor league pitcher of the month. We caught up with him yesterday. He was on the bus as they were making their way to play the Mobile Bears, Mobile, Alabama. And so as we continue our conversation, I just wanted to get a little scene check. I mean, what are guys doing on that bus? Who's asleep? What's going on in there? So as we, and what do they do on these rides? So here is that answer and more with Kyle.
You got about 80% of the bus is asleep, and the other 20 are watching videos on their phone. And then you have me talking on the radio.
Yeah, are they? Are people giving you looks right now? Are they mad at you? You're waking up? I mean, I want to apologize to the entire team if I have to.
No, absolutely not. I think 100% of the bus has some type of headphone in right now, so we are good.
So it's almost like it's not as fun as like a 70s bus trip because guys are, you know, there's just so much stimulation going on that you're sort of in your own world, which is cool too, for the record.
You get different kinds of bus trips, you know, after a win we're driving back from Chattanooga, and if anyone knows or has been in a, you know, on a bus for a long time with a bunch of guys, we play a game called Mafia. It gets really crazy. A lot of played in college, played in professional ball. It's a very, very fun game to play on a bus for long periods of time.
Can I get a, I don't know this game, Kyle. Can you explain Mafia? Is that it?
Let's say you have a group of 10 people, and there's a narrator, and you pick, you know, 2 to 3 Mafia members who go around in a sense, kill off the townspeople.
Uh-huh.
And that's the kind of objective of the game. And then you have a couple policemen, you have a couple doctors that try and pick out the Mafia and save each other. And then as the Mafia members are kind of picking off the townspeople, then people start arguing with each other on who to kill off next. So people, you know, start saying, I'm in the Mafia, he's in the Mafia. And it gets very intense, and people start arguing to the point where some people don't talk to each other for a couple of days because that's how intense the game gets. So it's just basically Mafia members versus townspeople who can survive.
So you don't,
and like I said, it gets really intense.
So you don't know who's who? Am I hearing this right?
You don't know who's who. The Mafia members know who they are. And then the police people know who they are. And the policemen, you know, pick, everyone has their heads down. And the narrator will say, Mafia, heads up. They'll put their heads up, and they'll pick a townsperson to kill. And then they'll put their heads down. Then the policemen will put their heads up, and they'll pick a person. And the narrator will say if they are or are not in the Mafia. And then everyone will have their heads up. The narrator will make up a joke story saying, oh, this person, and was doing something in the bullpen, and then a tree fell on him, and he, you know, he's done. And then people start arguing, saying, okay, if this person killed this person and this person's safe, then this person has to be in the Mafia. And then people start arguing, and it gets really loud. So, like I said, it gets to the point where some people don't talk to each other for a couple of days because that's how intense people get in this game. And if you've ever played college or professional baseball, they know exactly what game I'm talking about. And it's a fun game.
What's your favorite role?
I like to be the doctor so I can save myself, so I can live, obviously.
Kyle Kubot.
Or just sit back and watch and watch everyone fight. That's also kind of fun.
Well, I think this is good, though, right? Because the best thing about a fight is that you guys got to eventually come back, have a little repair, you know, become friends again, so maybe you get closer as teammates, right?
Absolutely. You know, about a week later, we start laughing at it. It's all good. It's all fun and games. No one gets that mad about it, but guys will argue a lot, and they'll just give each other a hard time because, you know, we're with each other for 140 games plus spring training, so we're with each other 8 months out of the year. We're a family. We'll give each other a hard time. We'll go through good times. We'll go through bad times together, and, you know, a good family sticks it out through thick and thin.
There it is. No doubt about it. Stick it out through thick and thin, like a family, a baseball team. Join us on Friday, June the 14th, as the White Sox host the Yankees at 7:10 for Rock and Roll Night and fireworks presented by Guaranteed Rate. Guaranteed Rate, your home team throughout the season and mortgage process. Get started today at rate.com to purchase tickets. Visit whitesox.com. And Sox fans, join us on Saturday, June the 29th, 3:12 p.m. in the afternoon as the Sox take on the Twins. First 10,000 fans, ages 21 and over, get a White Sox 3-1-2 hat presented by the Goose Island Beer Company. Goose Island, Chicago's beer. Purchase tickets today by visiting whitesox.com or call 866-SOX-GAME. Thanks a ton to Kyle Kubot for joining us and taking time as he was on the bus there. The Birmingham Barons going to Mobile, Alabama, where they were rained out last night, rained out today. He was supposed to start on Sunday. I'm not sure if they're moving around their rotation. Quick timeout. We'll get you into news. This is 720 WGN.